Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, all right. Look here, give me some straight funk with no chaser. You know how I roll. Listen, you are tuned in to Everybody is a Star, and this is your funkstress, Patrice Chocolate Banks. Thank God it's Friday, and thank all of you for spending your time with us tonight. Now, I'm going to get right into this. You know how I do. Don't waste any time. I'm excited about tonight's show. I stay excited. So, in honor of Black History Month, I am pumped about our guest tonight. Now, this lady is an original cast member of the original movie Sparkle. Yes, you heard it right, baby. I said Sparkle. Now, Sparkle is truly one of my all-time favorite movies. It really is. I can't even tell you how many times I have seen Sparkle. This lady played Dolores, who was the little sister, okay? So now, welcome with me tonight, Dwan, that is D-W-A-N Smith. Hey, lady, you there?
Hey, how are you?
I am good. Listen, thank you so much for joining us tonight. I really appreciate it. What's up? You got something special you want to do, right?
Yes, thank you for having me. I'm honored that you would. Right now, I'm in the middle of a rehearsal. I'm at Calvary Baptist Church, and this is a play I'm directing that they are doing in honor of Black History Month. So
okay.
I'm having to step out of my rehearsal. They're going to let me go. The producer, Donna Barth, is here. Say hi, Donna.
Hello.
And the actors are all here. They are. It's about Dr. King and President Barack Obama meeting and how things would happen if they were to meet. So this is Dr. King.
Good evening.
Greg, good evening.
And this is Michelle Obama.
Hi, Geneva Walker.
And this is Mrs. Coretta Scott King.
Good evening. This is Michelle Broadus.
She sounds like a dungeon. And this is our sound mixer.
Sonny Williams.
Okay, everybody. Yay! Okay, I'm going to step
Yay!
Up.
Yay! Thank you. So now, what is the name of the play?
Oh, the name of the play. She wants to know the name of the play. The name of the play is?
Fulfillment.
Fulfillment.
Yes.
And it's going to be, tell us where it's going to be and what the date is again.
Calvary Baptist Church of Pacoima. It's this Sunday, February 22nd at 6 o'clock p.m.
All right. That sounds so, you know, we talked about that. You told me a little bit about this play, and we talked about it. It sounds so interesting. And before I get into the interview, I would like you to just explain to my audience what you explained to me about what this play briefly is about, because it's awesome. I really love the idea of it.
Yeah, it's the idea is that Michelle and Barack are in the White House, and they are just stunned that they are there. They can't even believe that they are there. And then they talk about how they wish Dr. King could see it, because that would be his dream realized. And then out of nowhere, kind of in a dream sequence, Coretta Scott King and Dr. King appear. And then they have this conversation about how this happened and the contributions that Dr. King made toward making this happen. If he had not done what he had done, they would probably not be in the White House. So it is a play about discovery, and that's why it's called Fulfillment, because it's Dr. King's dream realized.
Wow. That's awesome. That is
it
awesome.
Is.
And so how long have you been directing and plays and such?
Okay. You know what? I've been very active in the community directing plays, and I've been directing plays a long time, probably, for the last 20 or 30 years, I think. I've been directing plays. And so for me, this is are you there now? I'm switching into my headphone.
Yes, I'm here.
So for me, this is absolutely nothing new. This is just part of my body of work.
Okay, and we're going to get more into that later, what you're doing right now. But what I like to do is I like to take my guests from the very beginning and work our way up all the way to what's happening now. So the very beginning, meaning hometown, okay, I like to start where they were born and raised, and I like for them to shout out their schools, you know, stuff like that. So that people that are listening can be able to, you know, relate to if you happen to have gone to the same school they went to. So let's start with your hometown.
Well, I am very, very proud to be a Southern girl. I was born and raised in Jackson, Tennessee. That's the home of Lane College. And I'm very proud of that. I went to Mary High School there. I graduated. Actually graduated from Lunatory in my class, which is number 2. And I had a very exciting and wonderful, I grew up at a time when people loved their kids, and kids respected school, and school was the thing that we went by was, if you don't have an education in the white man's world, you will never make it anywhere. And so I grew up in that time. I grew up when boys and girls still courted one another. You know, it wasn't just showing your hiney and showing off. It was when people truly respected one another, and they were taught to love and care for one another, family values. So in Jackson, Tennessee, and I played basketball all through high school. Yes, I did. Yeah, my stepfather, Jack Gilmore, was the coach of our boys football and basketball team. And he had 4 girls. I'm the oldest. So he didn't have a boy, so I was kind of the basketball person.
But so did you like it? Did you like action? Because you have to have a passion for athletics just like you have to have for, you know, any other creative thing that you're doing. So did you actually like it, or were you doing it for
him? I loved it. Loved it, and I excelled at it. I was all region, all district, all state for 3 years in a row. I absolutely loved, and I was very athletic, and I enjoyed all of that. And the thing is that I was very privileged because I grew up in I was kind of what they used to call the boys' once talented tenth. I grew up in a family of educators. My mother was a teacher. My stepfather, as I said, was a teacher and a coach. My dad was Dr. Frank Hoff Jr. And my grandfather, Dr. Frank Hoff Sr., had a dream. And his dream was to have his boys in medical practice with him. And my father, Dr. Frank Hoff Jr., was the dentist. My uncle, who just recently passed, Dr. Leroy Huff, was a pediatrician. And, of course, my grandfather was Dr. Frank Huff Sr. And he founded the first black family-owned medical clinic in the city of Kansas City, Missouri.
And
so
that is awesome.
I was very privileged in terms of, we were not rich people in terms of what I know to be rich is today, but we were well-respected within the community.
Mm-hmm.
We
mm-hmm.
had a place. And my grandmother used to always tell me, you do not have the right to fail. You do not have the right to fail. Too much has been given to you. So much has been given to you. So for that reason, and that's straight from the Bible, you know, too much, who much is given, much is expected, right?
Exactly.
And so that was the way that I was raised, and I carry that with me to this day.
Exactly. And I want to say that I can definitely relate to you being that Southern girl, because I, too, am from the South. I was in Texas, born in Texas. And you know, like you said, you know, when we were coming up, it was all about it's such a different time. It's such a different time. But, you know, it's all about respect. We had to say yes, ma'am, and yes, sir.
Absolutely.
You know what I'm saying? So it was all about moral values, family values, which is a good thing, which is what is wrong with so many of, well, I won't use the word wrong. I just think they have not been taught. The generation has not been taught. You know, the value.
And that's,
in
it's reflected in the music and the mores of today. And, you know, just growing up, we had it was a tough time because there was segregation. It was segregated,
right.
And there was, and as we've seen in Selma, I grew up through black water and white water, you know, all of that. But one of the side effects of segregation was that our folks closed in around us. They encamped us with an atmosphere of protection. And I grew up in a college town, Lane College. So I had the benefit of being at one of our historic black colleges. So I had the benefit of being able to see great role models. And
right.
We grew up in that whole thing about even if you didn't have money, it didn't take money for you to go to college. You just had to have the heart and the willingness to work hard. And you would find a way. I mean, kids worked as janitors around the school to finance their way through school. You know, people did things, and they were determined to get through school. And so
because that's what, you know, that was what the goal was. You know, that was what the goal was, education. And,
absolutely.
You know, I'm not so sure how, I mean, segregation, you know, had its pros, but it had its cons too, because as far as I'm concerned, when things were segregated, that meant that black people had to come up with their own stuff. They had to have own businesses. They had to have their own schools. They had to have their own everything, banks, you know, their own taxi companies, their own stores,
absolutely.
Their own everything. And then when integration came about, then you know, black people let all that go. You know, we let all our own stuff go to merge with what, you know, because trying to be a part of what white people were doing. So, you know, I'm not really convinced that segregation in itself was such a bad thing. But anyway, that's another whole conversation we want to talk about.
I understand what you're saying, and I think some of that is so true because I remember growing up, and we had black teachers, black professors, black mathematicians, black chemistry teachers.
Black doctors. You had a family full of black doctors.
Exactly. Meharry Medical School, Fisk University, all the historic black colleges, they weren't called historic black colleges. They were the black colleges.
Right.
That we've clung to. So you're right. It is a two-edged sword there. There were things to be gained and things that were lost. But I had a rich childhood. I'm proud of the childhood that I had.
That's something that I'm glad to hear. That's a good thing. Now, the creative side of you. Now, when did you realize, how did that creative bug first bite, and what was it? Was it acting? Was it music? What was it?
Well, it happened in Jackson two ways. One, at Lane College, they would have a lot of great artists to come in and do concerts and series. That's where I saw Marian Anderson, the great Marian Anderson. I had the privilege of standing close to her, backstage, close to her. And I saw pianist Lois Toles, and Big Maybell was from Jackson, Tennessee. And these people would come through, and they would give concerts at the concert hall. And when they would give concerts afterwards, they would talk. And they would talk in the concert hall afterwards. They would talk in the concert halls afterwards, and they would talk about the places that they had traveled all over Europe, and they'd been to, you know, Paris, and they'd been to Italy, and I just said, it seemed to me that all the great people were artists. They were entertainers, and they were traveling all over the world, and for some reason or other, the I just had it in my head that I wanted to be like them. And then there's a lady in my hometown, Mother Doris, Doris Price, and she made me the president of the Baptist Citywide Union. She appointed me. Because she saw a gift in me, and she was the only person my mother would let take me out and around. And she would take me to the different churches out in the country and all around, and she would have me make speeches. I would write these speeches to the youth of the church. And so I remember I was so short, I would stand up on an apple box so I could peep up over the podium and make speeches.
Okay.
And that's when I learned that I could do that. I loved writing speeches. I loved, as they called it in the old days, oratory. I loved being able to do that. And I think I am more comfortable in front of an audience than I am in front of just a room. Like in a restaurant, don't sit me in the middle of the room. I can't stand that. Put me in the back, in the corner, you know, on the side someplace. Not by the restroom, but some of the side. But call me in front of the restaurant, in front of the whole crowd there, and that's where I'm at home. And I love it. So that's kind of where it bit me. And then when I was in college, I went to Lincoln University. I'm a graduate at the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee. But when I was at Lincoln University for the first 2 years, my professor there, I was majoring in pre-med because I was going to be a doctor like the rest of my family. Dr. Thomas in the drama department said to me, because he saw me in a play, he said, "When are you going to come to where you belong? You belong in the drama department." And from that point on, I knew that that was my call.
All right. Okay, so now let's fast forward to how did you end up in Sparkle? I know that's a long story, but I know that you can give us
I had been doing a lot of commercials. That's how I actually got into business. I started out doing commercials when commercials were not commercials like they are now. As a matter of fact, my first year in a row, I did like 13 commercials in a row. And I didn't know that I was in
that
business.
That was good.
That was like amazing. My friend Hal Williams, who was on 227 with Marla Gibbs, at any rate, he took me to see an agent. And so the agent signed me, Herb Tanner. And that first year, I just went on to do like 13 national spots because I had the right look at the right time. I had a little afro with little pearl earrings, and I wasn't too light. I wasn't too dark. I was just kind of what they wanted, the advertising people wanted to see. So then I went on to do a series called Joe Forrester. And so anyway, I went on an audition for Sparkle. And I knew that I couldn't. I thought it was for singers, and I knew I didn't have it. I can sing, but now I'm not a singer, you know.
Right,
I'm not a Lettucey or any of those kind of people. So I knew I had to do something different to get through. So what I did was Eddie Beal was my singing coach. He used to coach people like Sarah Vaughan and Lena Horne, all of those
So
I went to him and I said, "Eddie, I got to do something for this audition. Will you come play for me?" So he said, "Yeah, okay." So we rehearsed God Bless the Child. And so when we got into audition, he started off playing and I started off singing, you know, "Then this God shall get, then this not."
Right.
And so then I said, "Eddie, I'm sorry. I said, I can't do this. I'm so sorry." I said, "Let's start all over again." And so Eddie looked at me like I was crazy, and this was in front of the producer and the director. And so they looked at me like crazy, and so Eddie started playing again. And then I said, "Eddie, I'm sorry, I can't do this." And I said, "Eddie, I got to have some. You got to give it to me. Give it to me now." And he looked at me like I was crazy. He said, What do you say?" I said, "Eddie, you know, I can't have some. I'm so sorry. I can't have it. Give it to me. Eddie, please." And so then I walked over to him like I was getting some coke, and I sniffed my nose. And he was looking at me like I was crazy. And so then I said, okay, now play it. So then he started playing again, and then I went on through the first chorus of the song. I said, so now, thank you. Now you know how I am. I got to be able to fly. And they had to call a break. They called a break.
I know they did. I know the drums were hitting the ground.
The producer told me later on, he said, I couldn't believe you. I thought you were actually actually having a breakdown. And Eddie told me, he said, girl, if you ever do that to me again, I will strangle you. But that's how I got it. They called me 2 days later and said, you got it.
Girl, listen, you had to do what you had to do.
I had to do something to stand out because I knew that I was a dynamite actress and my confidence was in being an actress. But I know
right.
I'm an actress who sings, not a singer, you know, who has that real gift.
You worked it out. You worked it right on out. Because that sounds like something I would have done. It's like, okay, I got to figure out how to do this. Okay, so you, and 2 days later, they called you in.
I didn't have to go on any more auditions or anything.
What was that call like when your agent said, okay, you got this part? So where did that take you?
I was screaming. I started screaming and crying at the same time. And that was before I was married and I was at my boyfriend, John Goldsmith, who's a legendary drummer. He started screaming too when I told him that. We just jumped up and down and jumped in a circle and, I mean, the feeling, I had no idea what Sparkle was going to be. I had no idea that it was going to end up being an iconic film. And I had no idea that 30 or 40 years later, people would still remember Sparkle or remember me or remember all of that. I didn't know at that time that it was going to be such an important piece of our history and of our African-American film history. I just knew when I went on that set that first day and I met Lynette McKee, who's my heart, and Irene Carr and Michael Philip Thomas and Tony King.
Let's stop at Michael Philip Thomas. Now, is he as fine? As fine in person as he was up on that screen? That's what I want to know.
The nicest person. You just fall in love with him just looking at him. Your mouth just drops.
Well, let me ask you this. Now, before you got the part, did you know who else was up for the movie, or did you just meet them after you got it? Okay, you met them after you got the part.
I didn't know who was up for it, and I really didn't know what it was about. I just, my agent called me and gave me kind of a synopsis, three girls that live in Harlem, and they end up being singers and all of that, and Sparkle ends up having a big hit song. So I got the synopsis, but I had no idea who was going to be in it. Absolutely none.
So when you met them, did you know any of them? Were you familiar with any of them already?
Not really. I knew of their work. I knew that Irene Carr had been on the Electric Light Company, and I knew of her work. And I knew after kind of reading their stuff, then I kind of recognized Lynette McKee had a recording contract, I think with Sax Records, and she was, I'm telling you, you're talking about two pretty ladies. Mm-hmm. Irene was beautiful and sparkly all over the place and dynamic, and Lynette McKee was, like, breathtakingly beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so, and it was interesting because I played the middle sister, and I played my character as I saw or thought in reality that she would be. She was not the cutest one. She was not the pretty one. and she was not the most talented one, but she was the intellectual. She was the thinker.
Mm-hmm.
And so I kind of played her that way at that time, and that's where I came from with her. And I didn't really know anything. I had done a lot of television. I didn't know anything about filmmaking. I didn't know that I could go look at the dailies every day, you know, and see them and see how my character developed. I didn't know any of that. So I
right. So this was a learning experience. What, and you know what a learning experience that was to be, it had to have Sparkle as a learning experience. And I just want to say that Sparkle, when I say it's one of my all-time favorite movies, it is. Every time it comes on TV, I look at it because it was just something, you know, as far as I'm concerned, it was way ahead of its time. You know what I'm saying? Like way ahead of its time. You know, it embraced so many issues that were like, at that time, like kind of shocking, like domestic violence and like
yes.
the drugs. Now we are yeah. now me as a you know, someone who aspired to be a singer. Anything that came on TV, the movies, anything that had to do with female, especially black females singing, I had to see it. I had to know about it. And when this movie came out, and it told that story, you know, like it did, it was like, you know, this is what I, you know, this just validated that this is what I had to be and this is what I wanted to do. You know what I'm saying? And it was just so motivating. You know,
wow.
we had to take, you know, us females back in the day, black female girls, teenagers, little girls, we had to take what we could get to glean from, you know what I'm saying, to motivate
exactly.
us. And so
exactly.
that's why this movie was so important and still remains important today. So,
well, you know,
with
one of the things that I like about my character was, and it has come to pass, it kind of forecast a lot of my life. When Dolores left, she said, there's more things to life than just singing and drugs. There's real life out there. People are doing things, you know. And it was real interesting because that kind of forecast part of my life as an actress, part of my journey. Because I,
right.
just like I'm rehearsing the play tonight, I became very, my credo is to live a creative life of service. And that life of service has filled in the spaces when there were not acting roles, when there was nothing, you know, that was there for me or there. I was able to be active in my community. I have directed so many plays and written so much stuff. It's not even funny. And because it has not been on the mainstream, you didn't see it on the big screen or didn't hear about it, does not negate the fact that I have laid down an accumulated, a serious body of work. And that work has been in terms of, for instance, one of my friends, Barbara Perkins, who was the founder of the National Council of Negro Women San Fernando Valley section, when the riots were going on, she said, you know, we should do something so that our kids don't dislike one another, because our children went to a private school and it was a mixed school. And so I said, okay. She said, I'm going to find some money and you write something. So she did. She went out and found a small grant, and I wrote a play called Mama, Why Is L.A. Burning? Windows, Why Is
uh-huh.
L.A. Burning? And so
uh-huh.
we did that play at the Boys and Girls Club in Pacoima, in San Fernando, and there were lines wrapped around the block to come see the play. And it centered around four families, an African-American, Latino, Caucasian, and a Korean family, and they were all looking out of their window at the street and seeing the riots happening in the street, and they were all interpreting the riots as they interpreted them from their culture and their viewpoint. Well, that
wow.
play went on from there to, it went down to Los Angeles Theater Center, and it ran down to LATC. That's where I really cut my producing wings at that run. And that run allowed Rosa Parks' team, my friend Shirley Washington, invited her Rodney King came to that night, to that place, to the premiere, and it just blossomed from there. And it allowed dozens of kids and their parents to dream, as you're talking about, because they were in a play, a huge play,
okay.
And they were able to invite their agents and people to see it. And these weren't just named people. These were people in our community who were talented and aspired to be there.
Right.
The character that I did in Dolores forecast some of my life as a real person. And I thank God for that. I thank God for that kind of, because my career, you know, I say that life is what happens while you're waiting for what you want to happen.
Okay.
That's life.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so my
absolutely.
Life has been absolutely so full.
And the thing about God is, that it to me, it's just so wonderful to just sit back and watch your life unfold, because ultimately his plan and his will is what's going to happen. So what we need to do is know this so that we can just wait in excited anticipation to see what his plan is for us. Okay,
absolutely.
So now what I want to do is I want to get to some of this music, okay? So
okay.
So let's start out with giving him something he can feel, and we're going to do this one, which is my favorite version by Aretha Franklin. Now, can you tell me, because I know that in the movie you did the background vocals, correct, on the the
mm-hmm.
soundtrack? So
mm-hmm.
what did you think when you first heard this song, Giving Him Something He Can Feel? Because, girl, this is a song right here.
Well, I heard the background when they were playing it when we were playing on the set, because Irene, Lynette and Irene really did the studio work. And when I heard them, and it's Curtis Mayfield, that's all you had to say.
Okay.
They were fantastic. I mean, the soundtrack that was done in the movie, Lynette, I have to give to Lynette and Irene and Michael and Dorian. There was nothing like it, and they made a decision, I guess, a marketing decision to release it for Aretha, and she did a great job. You know, Aretha is Aretha. I mean, it's great.
That's right. And I love her version of it. I love her version of it, so I said, okay, I'm going to make an executive decision here and say Aretha's version of Giving Him Something He Can Feel. So here we go, from Sparkle
okay.
on Everybody Is a Star, Giving Him Something He Can Feel. Go, Aretha.
Let you know just where I come from.
right. That's what I'm talking about, baby. And I want to say this, too. You girls were up there working those red gowns and all the rest of the stuff you had. And tell us about the choreography right quick. Who did that for you?
That was Michael Peters and Lester Wilson. Wilson and Michael Peters, they were legendary choreographers.
Yes.
They were the best in the business.
Yes.
And it was just amazing to even work with them because Irene and Lynette had danced before, especially Irene. They had dance experience. And I was the least, had the least amount of dance experience. And Michael Peters worked with me. He worked with me. And he broke it down and just made it so easy and so personal and made me feel comfortable, you know. So it was amazing. Those are legends. You know, they're legends.
Absolutely. And what
one of the funniest things about the red dresses, of the funniest things, quick story about the red dresses, they were so tight, okay? We could not sit down in them. And before, in between takes, they had these things called slant boards. And I'm not sure if they're still using them in film today, but they are boards that were made at an angle. The old-fashioned stars used to use them, and you would lean up against them. You know, because you couldn't sit. I had never heard of them before.
Girl, you had to lean. You had to lean because you could not sit down.
They were called slant boards, and you leaned up against them because you could not sit down. Okay. I'm sorry, guys. See you later. Okay. But at any rate, we had to lean up against these slant boards in order to. Because we couldn't sit down.
Wow.
And those red dresses are still, to me, one of my favorites. I love those red dresses.
Me too, those red dresses. They were hot.
Yeah, they were fun.
That's right. So now, as we got to move it along. As your career went along, you did a lot of television.
Yes.
And you did, just to name a few from my research here, I see that you did Room 222, Sanford and Son, let me see what else, the Jeffersons, Police Story, and you were on General Hospital from like 1987 to 1989. So you say you kept working, you were getting the gigs in, right?
Yes, I was blessed to just keep on working, and it was good. It was a good period, you know, and I think it's part of what was called the end of the studio system, and that at Universal with Monique James and Bo Wilson out there where they used to give contract players. They were contract players to the studio, and so they would keep putting them in different shows to build them. And so when I started out there, I was at the tail end of it. So I wasn't officially signed as a contract player, but they treated me as though I were a contract. And so that's why I went from show to show to show to show, all the shows that they were doing at that time. So it was really wonderful. It was really exciting.
It was. And, you know, I'm still getting over you breaking into show business via Sparkle. I mean, come on now. What more can somebody ask for? So now we have a couple of phone calls. Do you have time to take a couple of phone calls?
Absolutely. I'd love to.
Okay. So we're going to go with our first caller that's been waiting the longest, I believe. Area code 323. Area code 323. Caller, are you there?
Yes. Hi. My name is Yolanda. Hi, are you?
I'm good.
Hi, Dewan. I just want to say it's just been a pleasure, you know, listening to you and listening to your story and your journey. And I'm just really curious. I know that you're a very talented actress and producer and writer and director. My question is, how do you find the time to balance all your creative commitments with a family and social life? How do you balance all of that?
Well, you know what? First of all comes my family. God comes first, and then my family. And I am lucky to be married to my husband, Nate Fortier. We've been married 34 years now. We just celebrated our 34th wedding anniversary.
Wow,
and
congratulations.
And I'm blessed to be married to a man who likes what I do. He allows me the space and the freedom, you know, to do it and to be me. He was an L.A. County firefighter paramedic for all of that time, so he was able to support us. He had a stroke about 10 years ago, and so I backed out of the business for about 8 or 10 years to take care of him. But all of it just seemed to be life. You know, I'm just like any other mother. You know, you work, you go to a job, and you do what you have to do. You come home, you cook, you make sure the house is clean, you do the shopping. And I remember a lady saw me in Sears one day. She said, "Aren't you?" And I said, "Yeah." She said, "What are you doing in Sears?"
Same thing you're doing, shopping?
Same thing you're doing. So life is real, and I think I'm a person who's on schedule. I always have a calendar up in my office. I have a home office. And the kids have known since they were little, if it's not on calendar, don't ask. So if you have a school function, you have something, a practice I have to take you to, let me know ahead of time so I can put it on calendar, and then we'll make things, everybody gets what they need to get. So it's kind of been a system of learning checks and balances like that.
Just okay. Like you do, I'm sure, Yolanda. And Yolanda, where are you calling from, by the way?
I'm calling from Studio City.
Okay.
In the valley. And I just wanted
okay.
to ask a question, if I could. I know you got to move on to other people. But it's obvious, Dewan, that you've successfully managed to maintain a long career. What advice would you give to rising artists on how to consistently, you know, stay relevant in this ever-evolving industry?
Well, you know, that's kind of a question. That's a great question, Yolanda. It's a question I struggle with. How do I stay relevant in this community? But I think part of it is, well, first of all, I really think you have to be spiritually centered. I think, you know, you have to know that, for me, I have to know that there is God and that God is real. And so by going by what I've been taught all my life, I have a strong faith, and I believe in that faith, and I lean to that and not to my own understanding. And even the times when faith is the substance of things hoped for, not the evidence of things not seen. So there are times when I didn't see a career. I didn't get a gig or didn't get a call for 2 or 3 years. But I still maintained the gift that God had given me, and I still believed that it was for me, and I still do to this day. So I just continue walking in faith and using my gifts in the community. I never stop working. I am always working. You know, I don't know whether
absolutely.
Hollywood knows it. I don't care. But I know that I am using my gifts so nobody can throw me off track. I'm not going to get despondent or like, for instance, my husband, when he had the stroke after those 7, you know, years I had to pull back out of the industry, God blessed me with a one-woman show to write a show called Junk from My Trunk, a caregiver story. And this story, this one-woman show is about the cycle of being a caregiver. How, you know, your life is yanked out from under you, as ours was when my husband had a stroke, and then coming through the arc of losing my voice and then finding my voice again. So
wow.
No matter what I do, there is still that creative God has given me, that creative eye to be able to see life from that perspective. So if
wow.
that answers your question, I guess that's kind of what I do.
Yolanda, are you still there?
Yes, I am. Thank you for sharing.
Okay,
that.
Well, try to go check out the play that Dewan is directing this Sunday. At where is it again, Dewan?
At Calvary Baptist Church in Pacoima, in San Fernando. It's at the corner of Vaughn, I think, in Dronefield. It's
what's
Calvary time? Baptist Church. Apostle William T. Broaddus is the pastor. It's a big, huge church, so you
and
can't miss it.
And what time is it? What time
and
is it?
And the program, Donna, what time is the program? Donna, it's at 7? 6 o'clock. 6 o'clock.
6 o'clock.
Okay,
Yolanda.
Right.
So check that out. Check that out.
Thank you for calling, Yolanda. Thank you so much for calling in.
Okay.
What do you do, Yolanda? Are you in the business?
Yes. I'm a filmmaker, you know, and a writer.
I could sort of tell that Yolanda. I could sort of tell that she was in the business. Couldn't you, Dwan?
Okay, Yolanda. Don't forget me. Write me something.
Okay. Thank you so much for calling, Yolanda. And we're going to take another call if they are still there. And this will be probably our last call because we're running out of time. So area code 310. Are you there? Area code 310.
Hello?
Hello? Hi.
Yeah, can you hear me?
Who's calling? Yep, who's calling?
This is Story X Xavier from American Voice TV.
Oh, hi, Story X.
Yeah, calling to tell you, Patrice, thank you for having Dwan on. She's one of the best persons you could meet on this planet. She's positive. She's for women's causes. She's an excellent mother and a wife. I just praise Dwan. So thanks for having her on. And she's part of our show.
Pleasure.
She knows about American Voice. That's the next coming up show. We are seeking the greatest broadcast voice in the world competition show. And that's never been done in history. So I'm going to let you go, Patrice. Thank you. We love you, Dwan. Keep up the good work, babe. We'll talk.
Okay,
thank you for
calling
you.
In. All right.
Okay,
bye-bye.
Okay.
Right.
All right. That was awesome. He hit it and quit it, didn't he? Okay. I know that you have some stuff that you have to go back to that you're doing. So we know that you're directing. We know what you're to come Sunday to Calvary. So what is in the future for Dwan? What are you doing? You're going to continue to direct and just, like you said, express the gift that God gave you.
Exactly. My next big effort, I just finished last week working, Holland Doja Holland, the songwriter.
Of course.
Stop in the Name of Love and all that. Anyway, they got their star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame last Friday, as
Yay.
A matter of fact. And I was fortunate enough to be asked to serve on that committee, the Friends of Holland Doja Holland, with some really great people. Shirley Washington was. They invited me to join. So I just finished working on that project. There's pictures on the Facebook about from that, and I'm wearing this fabulous Linda Stokes gown and all of that. And so my next big project is my one-woman show. I've just about finished scripting that. I finished scripting, actually. So now I'm doing the rewrites, and it's called Junk from My Trunk, A Caregiver Story. We are hoping to have that up late summer, early fall. So that's the
big make sure
thrust
you keep
right
me
now.
Posted. Make sure you keep me posted so I can make sure that everybody knows about it, okay? Let me ask you this. Where can we go to find out what Dwan Smith is doing? Like social networks?
On my website, you can go to my website. Just look, Google my name, Dwan Smith, and it'll have my website, dwansmith.com. Up there, and I'll have all the information on there. We're still constructing the website, so be patient with us, but it'll have all my information up there, and also I put out alerts on Facebook. So you can look Dwan Smith up on Facebook, and you'll see the things that I'm doing. And I appreciate your asking because the play, my one-woman show, is so important to me. It is so important because there's so many people who are caregivers out there.
Absolutely.
And as we age, notice I don't say get older. I'm never gonna get old. I may age, but I'll never get old. You know what
Thank
I'm saying?
You.
But
yes.
as we age, that is part of our journey.
I know exactly
journey.
What you're saying.
That is part of our journey. We are either taking care of someone, we know someone is taking care of someone, or we've taken care of a mother or father or uncle or sister or brother. So caregiving is a very serious commitment, and it is a huge segment of our population. So that is what my one-woman show is about, the journey of being a caregiver.
Okay, well, you make sure that you keep me posted on that because that's what another thing, us being Southern girls, that was also a part of our what we did. You know, I used to go visit my relatives, you know, my mama would take me and we'd go in the house, and one of my great uncles or great aunts, they'd be in a bed in the living room. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Being taken care of by their family. So different than today, but that's a part of our culture. Well, at least in the South, that's how we were raised. You know what? I wanted to just ask you this, though. I almost forgot to ask you this. What did you think about the and we can make this brief, but I just was curious about what you thought about the latest version of the Sparkle movie with Whitney and Jordan and all of them. What did you think about that?
Everybody asked me that. Well, first of all, I'm proud that any of our projects for Black people get green lighted. You know, I'm very excited about that because it's hard to get a movie made in Hollywood, period. So I was very proud of that. And I thought that they did a great job. I thought that the character, my character, Dolores, I thought that Tiki Sumter did in the remake what I originally thought should have been done in the original film, the story arc. But they were afraid of her character. You know, they were afraid of Dolores because she was a little militant for them. But I thought that they did a really, really good job. I was proud of them. I don't think that in terms of the story arc, I think that in the original, when Sister died in the film, I think that that was the heart of the film. I think that was part of the tears that – I didn't think that the remake had that same kind of impact. You know,
I agree.
And I loved seeing Whitney Houston sing and perform in that. So they both had their really, really good points. I loved our costumes better in the original than I did in the remake. But that's just, I could just be a little bit jaundiced.
No. I agree with you. Me too. It's nothing like, you know, things can be duplicated all the time, you know, but you cannot replace something that's innovative. You know what I'm saying? You cannot
do
that.
I like the updating that they did that made the characters more middle class, which gave us, which was good too. So there were strengths to both of them. And I'm hoping that they'll make a Sparkle 3 and a 4 and a 5 and a 6. You know,
I heard that. Yeah, I was just curious about what you thought about that. I liked it. It was there, like you said, it had its good points. One of the things I liked the most was the house that they did.
Oh, the house was beautiful. And all of the actors did a great job. I mean, you can't put it down in any way. I think that all of the actors did a fantastic job.
Yes,
and
they did.
And I enjoyed watching them. And I especially enjoyed being on red carpet with Tyler Perry. That was a fun thing.
Oh, yeah. That's right. I know that was fun.
And to be invited, you know, to be invited and be a part of the remake, it helped to revive, to call attention to our careers again. So who can find fault in that?
Absolutely. And as well as you should have been invited. I mean, come on. I mean, how can they do it without you? So now, let me say this. Got any shout-outs?
What?
Shout-outs.
Shout-out to
somebody out?
Oh, yes. Shout-out to my loving husband. Shout out to my loving husband, Nate Fortier, and to my son, Andre, and to my daughter, Ayana, and all 8 of the grandchildren, and to my pastors and my church and my friends and all the doctors who keep me going. Shout out to all of these people.
I heard that.
Yeah, and I'm grateful. I'm so grateful to all of you. I'm grateful to you for calling in, and I'm grateful to all of those people.
And you know what? Let me say I have a couple. Let me let you know this. I have a couple of other callers that are waiting to talk to you, but I know that your time is limited, so I just want to acknowledge that I know that they are waiting. I'm sorry. Next time, maybe we'll do a part 2. So now what we're going to do on our way out, we're going to play Just Like in the Movies, and I want you to tell me a little bit about Just Like in the Movies, and I'm going to play all the rest of the songs that you also submitted, which were Hooked on You, It's My Time, Beautiful Feet, and Moved by You. We're going to play those on the outro, but your theme, I want you to tell me what it is about that
the reason why you submitted it.
Now you're going to make me cry, just like in the movie.
Don't cry. Don't cry.
My husband, in addition to being a firefighter paramedic at Los Angeles County, has always made music. He's always written and produced music. He had the title cut on Freda Payne's last album when she was at Capitol Records, a song called Red Hot. He wrote this song, and it's about us. It's about when a boy meets a girl, they fall in love. They take a vow to always stay in love, just like in the movie. And that's been our theme song. It was a theme song for our wedding invitations. When we renewed our vows at our 20th anniversary, it was the song for that. And I think it's one of the most beautiful things he's ever written. And it's our song for life, just like in the movie.
Okay, well, that explains just like in the movie. Now, before we sign off, I want to say, for all things chocolate, go to PatriceChocolateBanks.com. And I want to shout out my family and my husband, Donald Horn. I want to shout out the Facebook Nation. I want to shout out Tribe Family Channel, Beverly Black Johnson, who is the creator of Tribe Family Channel. I want to shout out Bruce George Media. And I want to thank everybody for joining us tonight. And until next week, may the funk continue to be with all of y'all, okay? And so we're going to go out on all the songs I mentioned, but this first song is going to be just like in the movies, which is Dwan's theme song, her and her husband's soundtrack to their lives is what it sounds
Being sung by Rick Smith.
By Rick Smith, and we're going to go out on that. And Dwan, I almost made it through the whole show without doing that. I just want to thank you one more time because I know you are a busy lady, and I really appreciate you. And we're going to stay in contact because I got to come and see some of these plays and maybe be in a couple of them. You know what I'm saying? They need some funk, okay?
thank you so much.
God bless you.
Bye-bye.
Until
Bye-bye.
Next week, when everybody is a star, here we go with Just Like in the Movies, Rick Smith on Everybody is a Star.
A boy meets girl, they fall in love, so they take a vow to always stay in love. Just like in the movies, they turn a house into a home to share their dream and raise a family, just like in the movies. You made my life a fairy tale come true. It feels so nice in paradise with you, just like in the movies. Heaven built to last, so put your hand in mine, let's stand the test. Just like in the movies, we'll make it through the toughest times, love's ups and downs, life's funny rhyme. Just like in the movies, don't you know? In the movies, it's a paradise for two, just like in the movies, baby. Girl, I give my heart to you, just
those who carry the gospel, they go where they are sent. Without a compliment, yet they do smile. Sometimes crying inside. So beautiful, beautiful, they have beautiful feet. Beautiful are the feet of those who carry this gospel. Oh, if you only knew the things that they go through. Yes, they kneel here. Yes, they do. They inspire others to live. Beautiful. So beautiful.
Ladies and gentlemen, Club Jam during the past has to present some of the new discoveries of the wonderful world of show business. And the night is no exception. We would like to present for your enjoyment and entertainment pleasure the very sensational, dynamic, lovely, talented Sister and the Sisters.
Falling, done with losing. Time upon the planet.